cavalcade of kings. This is the second in the series of radio dramas based upon the lives of the kings and queens of England. When Edward the Elder, the first king of all England, died, he had accomplished his sacred vow to unite the peoples of England. The mantle of this noble king fell upon the broad shoulders of his son Athelstan, who came to the throne in the year 925 Anno Domini. About 12 months after he became king, we find him talking with his sisters, Eadgith and Eadgifil. Athelstan is telling them stories of his father and his aunt Ethelfleda. And after many glorious victories, our aunt Ethelfleda at last fell in battle, giving her life for England.
What was she like, Athelstan? I was too young to remember her.
She was tall and fair, possessing splendid physical courage, Christian self-restraint, and self-sacrifice.
Our father loved her dearly, did he not?
Yes, Eadgifil, he adored her.
And to think that she died at the hands of those heathen dogs. What sort of men were the Vikings?
They were fearless and impervious to pain. They were capable of suffering unendurable hardship. And he only was thought worthy to fully deserve the name of Sea King, who never slept beneath a sooty rafter and never drank at the half corner. There is a story told of Snorri, the son of Thorbrand. Snorri was the cheeriest of his brothers as he sat at table one evening, eating his curdled milk and cheese. And Gude, his brother, said to him,
"Why do you eat your cheese so slowly, Snorri, my brother?"
"Gude, all am the slowest over their eating when they're fresh gagged. And I fear me I'm like those lambs. There seems to be a gag in my throat."
"Let me look at your throat. By the gods, there's an arrow stuck in it."
"Ah, then be good enough to pull it out and let me eat my food in comfort."
That was the type of man who invaded England and eventually settled here.
But why did they come here? Could they not have gone somewhere else?
Yes, I suppose they could. But their choice fell upon England, and the reason for coming was that Harald, the son of one of the tribal kings of Norway, conquered the Norsemen and forced them to acknowledge him as their king. Some of the people refused, and rather than bow the knee to him, they left their country and sailed to the Orkney Islands. Others went south to the Isle of Man. Some went to Ireland. Harald had several sons, but only two survived him. One was Eric Bloodaxe, who went to sea in a Viking ship when he was 12 and did not return for 8 years. And the other was Hakon, who was born many years later. Eric now sits upon the throne of Norway, and Hakon is here at my court.
I've often wondered why, my brother.
I will explain his presence then, Egid. Some time ago, I sent a sword to Harald, which he accepted, thereby binding himself to me as my man. Before he died, he sent to me a ship richly laden with presents. I was holding court when his ambassador arrived, and he came before me, and he said,
"Sire, I am come as the ambassador of my royal master, King Harald of Norway. He sends you a ship laden with presents. He also sends his youngest son, this child whom I bear in my arms. His name is Hakon. Won't you hold him upon your knee? See, he is so very tiny and such a pleasing baby."
"Why, of course I'll take him upon my knee."
"You have taken Hakon upon your knee, sire, and that means you have adopted him as your foster child."
"But this is trickery."
"No more than the sword which you so generously presented to my master, sire, which when he accepted it, made him your vassal."
"And so I kept the child and brought him up as my own son. But I've grown to love him dearly."
"So have we all. And I have a feeling that he will serve you well ere many years have passed."
"Perhaps he will, Eadgifil. For none knows what the future holds for any of us."
"But surely you do not expect further troubles with the Danes, brother. I thought we were at peace with them at last."
"In peace, 'tis well to prepare for war. And we have to be on our guard all the time against the pirates and traders who continue to harass our coast. Who comes?"
"Sire, there is a man without who brings grave tidings from the north."
"From the north?"
"Send him to me at once."
"Yes, sire." King Athelstan will see you. Please enter.
What news from the north do you bring?
Northumberland is in revolt against you, and the whole of the north is aflame. An alliance has also been formed between the North Norsemen and the Scots.
Oh, Athelstan, what will you do?
Do as my father did before me. Peace is at an end. Once more I must buckle on the sword of my grandfather in the service of England.
Athelstan, at the head of his army, advanced upon Northumbria and quickly subdued its people. He then rode to the west and broke the alliance which had been formed between the North Welshmen and the Scots. And as a punishment for their treachery, he demanded an annual tribute from them, forced them to serve in his army, and imposed his government upon them. The Welsh in Cornwall were also reduced to a vassal state, and he next drove the Britons from Exeter, which they had occupied with the English. Having at last stamped out the fires of rebellion, he returned home, where we now find him in earnest conversation with Charles the Simple, the French king at large, and his feudal tenant Hugh Capet, the ancestor to a long line of French kings.
Charles, you say you desire to marry my sister Egifield?
Yes, Athelstan. That is the reason of my visit to England.
And you, Hugh Capet, wish to marry Edith?
That is so, Athelstan. You will give your consent?
If I only had the advantages of such a union to consider, I would gladly give my consent. But there are other things to be thought of as well.
You are afraid that you may be sacrificing your sisters upon the altar of their country, eh, my friend?
That, Charles, is so.
I never thought I would have to remind Athelstan of England of his duty to his country.
There is no need to remind me, for I know where my duty lies. An alliance between France and England is something I greatly desire, for the south of England would then be safely guarded against attack. But already one of the women of my house has given her life for her country. I do not wish to sacrifice two more. I am torn between two fires, love of country and love of my own flesh and blood. I would far rather be standing on the battlefield where the spears and arrows fall thickest, for there I would know what to do. As it is... let's go outside into the garden. I can think better in the fresh air.
If it will enable you to make up your mind, let us do so by all means.
Then come this way.
You heard Edith every word. What are we going to do? Do you love Charles?
I hate him. He's so old. His face is pockmarked. His eyes are wicked and cold as a snake's. But I shall marry him.
I must marry the smug-faced Hugh Capet. For England comes first.
We must never let Athelstan know our true feelings. It would make him desperately unhappy to think he'd forced us to marry against our will.
Egerfool, are we big enough to make this sacrifice? Think what it will mean. Years of mental anguish, years of heartache, years of loneliness spent in a strange land amid strange people.
Don't, Edith. Don't make it harder. You see, I already love someone with all my heart and soul. And I must now put all that behind me.
Egerfool, little sister, I did not know.
It is true, Edith. I will try and be brave. The knowledge that I am doing my duty will help me bear my grief. But if it should happen to overcome me, I will remind myself that I am not alone in my sacrifice, and that we are both fulfilling our destiny and helping our brother, the King of England, to keep our glorious country free.
After their marriage in England, the two sisters left for France with smiling lips, but with breaking hearts. Another link had been forged in the chain of sacrifice which has helped to make England great. Sometime later, Athelstan engaged the combined forces of the formidable confederacy of Scotland, Cumberland, and the British and Danish chiefs of the West and East who had risen. His glorious victory at Brunanburh has been sung about in a noble war song, and the victory wrecked the Danish hopes, which were further crushed when Hakon, the foster child of Athelstan, led the English forces against his brother Eric, King of Norway, thereby preventing further Viking raids at the coasts of England. At the moment, Athelstan is returning from his brilliant victory at Brunanburh, and we find him conversing with one of his generals.
Your remark about my sword, good friend Robert. You'll think it a magic sword, eh?
Yes, sire. I have seen you in the thickest of the fray, surrounded by foemen, but you draw your sword, and the flash of its shining metal seems to blind your enemies, and their spears lose their mark.
Oh, it is my talisman, Robert. Given to me in my childhood by my noble grandfather, Alfred the Great. He bade me carry it for England, and only to draw it in the cause of the weak, the cause of justice, and the cause of freedom. I have kept my promise.